It's time to Fade the Chalk.
Fade the Chalk.
Presented by the FTN Network, helping you win your fantasy leagues and dominate in DFS. And now, here are your hosts, Derek Brown and Adam Pfeiffer.
Another week of football, and we are back here on Fade the Chalk. Welcome back, everybody, to the Week 10 Recap Edition here, solo with your host, myself. It's me. I'm talking to myself. I do it every week. It's Adam Pfeiffer. Hopefully, week number 10 went well for everybody out there. Sunday Night Football, just about, 25 to 30 minutes away from kicking off, but I am here to recap the games that we saw in the early afternoon and the late afternoon. There was a lot. It was a nice balance slate that we saw, right? You had less 1 o'clock games than normal, which gave us plenty of 4 o'clock games, which was great to see. So we'll break everything down that happened. Before we do that, though, I want to plug a bunch of great stuff over at FTN. Hopefully you took advantage of the deal. We had 33% off FTN daily if you signed up prior to kickoff today, so that was out there. And recently we launched FTN Gold, which is $39.99 a month. It comes with your specialty sports, right? NHL, college basketball. It was kind of launched right when college basketball season started. So you get NHL, you get college basketball, college football, esports, tennis, soccer, and NASCAR, all included for $39.99 a month. That's everything, the content, the articles, the Discord, all that great stuff over at FTN Daily Gold. And you have to be checking out, if you're a member of FTN Daily, check out the optimizer for both football, basketball, everything. It is unbelievable. Kyle Murray just took home a tournament over on FanDuel for NBA, and he walked you through it on his show, The Optimal, where he broke down what he did, how he used the optimizer to come across that lineup, and how he took home the money. So again, FTN Daily, check out the optimizer. Of course, check out all the sites as well, FTN Fantasy, FTNBets.com. Let's get to the games, and we'll start with the Dallas Cowboys bouncing back in a huge way at home against the Atlanta Falcons. They dominate here, 43-3. I gave Atlanta way too much credit there, and it was just everybody, right? I mean, Dak Prescott, 296 yards, 2 touchdowns, adds a rushing touchdown. 2 of them go to CeeDee Lamb, who was awesome in this game, 6 for 94 and 2 touchdowns. He only threw 2. That's right. Michael Gallup, nice to see him back in the lineup, and he made plays immediately, right? Made a play down the field on the sideline on 4th down to get him inside the 5-yard line. I tweeted it too. It's like, yeah, Dallas had one bad game on offense the other week, but like, adding a player like Michael Gallup to an already loaded offense, it just isn't really fair at all. Gallup actually played more snaps than CeeDee Lamb in this game. I did notice that CeeDee Lamb was apparently dealing with like an arm contusion or something, and the game was out of hand, so I don't think there's anything to worry about with Lamb, but Gallup wasn't really limited. I mean, he played 41 of a possible 77 snaps. The team lead for snaps at receiver was Amari Cooper with 51, so that was great to see. I think Gallup, there's obviously going to be games where even if they don't win and score 40 points, there's going to be games where Dallas is going to be able to control throughout and run the football, and it's going to be tough for all three of these receivers to do well in fantasy, but I mean, Gallup's still going to be like a weekly flex in this offense with the talent he has and with Dak Prescott under center. His presence definitely seemed to hurt Dalton Schultz, because like with Blake Jarwin out, Schultz is clearly the guy at tight end, dominated the snaps and everything, but he only had 2 targets in this game. I mean, Lamb led the way with 8, Gallup had 5, Cooper had 4, Schultz only had 2, and then of course the 2 running backs combined for 10, so definitely something to keep an eye on with Dalton Schultz's involvement in the passing game going forward now that that Michael Gallup is back. So keep an eye on that. That's a big takeaway. Zeke got 2 short yardage touchdowns. Other than that, it wasn't anything special, but Dallas just a massive game. Then we have Atlanta, who just didn't show up in this game. Cordell Patterson suffered an ankle sprain. I believe he did return, but then at that point, he just didn't play much in the second half, which is why you see Wayne Gallman, leading the backfield in snaps. I guess it's something to keep an eye on with Patterson, right? An ankle sprain for a running back, you don't love to see. But, like, when he was on the field, Patterson was clearly the focal point of the offense. It was him and Pitts. And I expected, you know, first of all, I expected Atlanta to keep this game competitive and maybe get more of a high scoring game on both sides of the ball. That didn't happen. But we'll have to keep an eye on Cordarrelle Patterson if he misses time. And Gallman got 15 carries. Like, they just, it feels like Atlanta just kind of, you know, waved the white flag at a certain point and said, we're just going to see what Gallman does with his touches. Not going to throw, you know, Cordarrelle Patterson back out there. Not going to throw Mike Davis back out there. So all in all, just a brutal game from the Atlanta Falcons offense. Moving on to the Colts, they win at home 23-17 over the Jacksonville Jaguars. And once again, Jonathan Taylor dominant. He has now scored, I believe, in what, seven straight games, over 100 scrimmage yards or 110 scrimmage yards and a touchdown in all those games. He's been the best player in fantasy over the last month or so. Continues it here with 21 carries, 116 yards and a touchdown. I mean, the Colts' first play of the game was a 34-yard run from Jonathan Taylor. And you probably knew right then and there it was going to be another special game from JT. He's unbelievable. He is now past the favorable part of his schedule, right? He's got, I believe, Tampa Bay and Buffalo coming up next, which are two very difficult matchups, but it doesn't matter. You're not benching Jonathan Taylor. And the other thing I talked about a lot is, yes, Jonathan Taylor is an incredible running back, one of the best in the league. He's amazing. But the Colts' offensive line finally being at full strength, right? Like, they missed Braden Smith for a lot of the season. Quentin Nelson went on IR for a little bit. Like, this unit is whole, and they're the best in the NFL. When, like, they're just unbelievable, and it's fun to watch, honestly. So Jonathan Taylor's a stud. Underwhelming, disappointing game from Carson Wentz. Only 180 passing yards. Does not score a touchdown in this game. Didn't help that they got a possession taken away off the Colts blocked punt that they ran in into the end zone for a touchdown. But Jacksonville's pass defense actually did pretty well here. Pittman had 5 for 71 on 5 targets. He continues to be, you know, a low end wide receiver 2 each week. Other than that, there's really nothing from this team. In Jacksonville, I mean, James Robinson played. I believe Carlos Hyde got the start, but Robinson got going and not surprisingly outproduced James Robinson as the game went on. He finishes with 12 carries for 57 yards and a score. And Dan Arnold, once again, 7 targets, leads the team. Laviska Shenault had 8 targets, which is encouraging. He only caught 3 of them for 15 yards as this Jacksonville passing game is broken. I had a lot of interest in Marvin Jones in tournaments and DFS and stuff like that because the Colts were such a pass funnel. They struggled to limit the deep passing plays, and it just didn't happen. I mean, the Jacksonville passing offense, it's really bad. Jamal Agnew ripped off a 66-yard touchdown run, but you're still not starting anybody from this offense outside of James Robinson and probably, I guess, Dan Arnold, given the state of the tight end position. He's been their focal point of their passing game since being acquired by Jacksonville. It's kind of odd, but that's the case. New England dominates Cleveland at home 45-7. No Damien Harris in this game, so Ramondre Stevenson gets a start, and he really performs well. 20 carries, 100 yards, and a pair of touchdowns for Stevenson. I was a little bit worried. We saw, I believe it was Brandon Bolden that operated as the number one running back during warmups, like when they're, you know, warming up with their starters. So between that and the fact that it's Bill Belichick and the fact that we've seen Ramondre Stevenson struggle with, you know, ball security and blitz pickup multiple times this year, I was a little bit worried, but I didn't play him in DFS, but Stevenson, per usual, like he's done all year when he's gotten opportunities, you know, ran extremely hard, out-snaps Bolden and Taylor. He goes 37 snaps compared to Bolden and Taylor's 30 combined. And as expected, when they ran the ball, it was with Stevenson, right? He had 20 carries, Bolden and Taylor combined for 9. Bolden was, like more of the third down back, but Stevenson still had 5 targets. So Damien Harris, I expect him to probably be back next week, but, you know, Stevenson, when he's been on the field, he's shown that he should have a role in this offense. He was the best running back in the NFL in the preseason. Yes, it's the preseason, but anytime he's been on the field, he's been ripping off explosive runs and he runs hard. So a nice game from Stevenson if you picked him up and started him this week. And he did it. I think we should get him a cake or something, but Jacoby Myers finally scores his first career NFL touchdown. And do you think it meant something to the New England Patriots? They're up by 30 points or whatever. The game is completely out of reach and Myers scores a touchdown and the entire Patriots bench runs over to the back of the end zone and just embraces him. And it was really cool to watch. So good to see from Jakobi Meyers. Mac Jones played really well in this game, completed a ton of passes, actually 19 of 23 for 198 yards and three touchdowns, two of which went to Hunter Henry, who dominated the playing time and targets at tight end because Jonnu Smith was out for this game. I mean, Hunter Henry keeps getting targets, or touchdowns, rather. Was he scored seven in his last seven games now? Dominated the snaps and routes over, you know, Asiasi and Matt Lacoste. He's still very touchdown dependent, but when you're a tight end, you're getting the end zone targets that he's getting. Yeah, it's hard not to, you know, look his way. For Cleveland, it was a mess. They were awful. Got off to a decent start, drove down the field and scored on their first possession, I believe it was, and then nothing else. D'Ernest Johnson played every single running back snap, all 52. He had eight targets, 19 carries, just an absolute clear workhorse role. Probably goes away with Nick Chubb expected to be back next week, but you know, like, when D'Ernest Johnson has a large role in the offense, he's going to produce. The offensive line is still right there with the Colts as the best in the league. Johnson just looks the part. His jump cut is unbelievable. It's my favorite thing to watch with him. His jump cut is so good. So, I wouldn't drop him or anything. We still don't know if Kareem Hunt's going to be back yet. And he's getting, like, you know, 7 to 10 carries or touches per game alongside Nick Chubb. So, yeah, definitely don't drop D'Ernest Johnson. Baker Mayfield got hurt in this game. Didn't return. Case Keenum, like, Cleveland, like, I'm not starting anybody other than whoever the starting running back is for the Cleveland Browns in fantasy. Just not doing it. Moving on to another blowout between two AFC teams. Buffalo bounces back here against the Jets, 45-17. And look, going into this game, the New York Jets, right, allowing a league-high 1.9 rushing touchdowns per game to opposing backfields. So it's a good spot for Singletary. We expected him to be the lead back if Moss didn't clear concussion protocol. And then Moss does clear the protocol. So Moss is active. But then Matt Breida is active for the first time in a long time. And Matt Breida scores two touchdowns on six touches. So you get two touchdowns from Matt Breida. One from Singletary. One from Moss. And one rushing touchdown from Isaiah McKenzie. So the Jets continue to just get absolutely destroyed by anybody that's running. It doesn't have to be a running back at this point. Just anybody that's running the football for an opposing offense, the Jets can't stop. And they definitely can't stop them from getting into the end zone. So that actually hurt Josh Allen's ceiling, who played well in this game, but he had the two touchdowns and 366 yards on just 28 attempts. But he could have had like five touchdowns. But for the first time, really, in a long time, it was the Bills' backfield that converted from in close and converted from, you know, 15 yards out or so. And that's just what happens when you play the Jets. Stephon Diggs, massive game for him. Finally had that ceiling game, that true ceiling game we've been waiting for. They found mismatches all game and went to Diggs. They threw him like two straight fades into the back left at the corner of the end zone. The first one just barely incomplete, and they went right back to him and he scored. He finishes with eight catches on a team high, 13 targets, 162 yards and a score. I've been, you know, trying to buy low on Diggs for a while now. It just made way too much sense. Couldn't get it done, and don't think I'll be doing it anytime soon after a game where he has that huge of a performance and, what, 13 of the 28, so like 47% of the Bills' targets. So other than that, though, it was disappointing for Sanders. For Beasley, only had two for 15. Knox returned in this game, and he definitely changes the offense because he's way more athletic and gives you more ability after the catch and everything than Tommy Sweeney. But he's also really good at blocking, and that's showcased with the Bills bouncing back huge here. And Gabriel Davis, 3 for 105, crazy catch he had. Good to see that, you know, if he ever needed to come in and play, they're more than comfortable playing Gabriel Davis. For the Jets, I don't understand. Maybe I'm missing something. I didn't understand this, like, this appeal with Mike White. Like, the guy just throws like 40% of his passes up to the line of scrimmage to running backs, checking it down. And everybody's like so excited to watch him and stuff. It's like, yeah, it's cool. It's a good story. I get it. He was a late pick. But he reminded you that he's like a seventh round pick a couple years ago or whatever he was. And he was bad today against the best defense in the NFL, or arguably the best defense in the NFL. Four picks, zero touchdowns. Interestingly enough, I believe all four of the Bills starters at the secondary, both their safeties and then Trey White and Levi Wallace, all had interceptions in this game, which is kind of cool. Corey Davis returned and had 5 for 93 on 7 targets. They really mixed it around. Elijah Moore had a garbage time touchdown from Joe Flacco. He had 6 targets. Michael Carter and Ty Johnson both combined for 14 targets. So once again, Mike White really throwing to the running backs. And Michael Carter dominated the carries. He handled 16 of the 22 running back carries in this game. Scored a short yardage touchdown later on in the game. Still holding Elijah Mitchell. If you added them off waivers last week, I would still hold on to him. Corey Davis in the right matchup, I guess. And then Michael Carter probably starting most weeks, especially in PPR leagues. But it's still good to see him in a game where, yeah, he had four for 43 in the passing game. It was also still good to see him get the majority of the carries, get the goal line work, and convert. Two of my buddies were at this game, and I guess it was exciting to watch and be there, but at some point, watching it at home on television, you're just like, all right, can we just wrap this up? Like, Lions 16, Pittsburgh Steelers 16. We have a tie in Pittsburgh. Roethlisberger on Saturday night tested positive for COVID, was out for this game. So Mason Rudolph comes in and, you know, didn't do much as expected. So, you know, saw a heavy dose of Najee Harris in this game, 105 yards on 26 carries. He added 4 receptions. Pat Freiermuth with a dud, 9 targets, fumbled late in the game. Deontay Johnson, 7 for 83 on 13 targets. So, again, double-digit targets. Doesn't matter if Ben's there or not. Deontay's getting the ball. And with Claypool out and Juju obviously out for the season, Ray-Ray McLeod came in and had a career-high 9 receptions on 12 targets over college teammate of Mason Rudolph, James Washington, who did score in this game but only had 6 targets and only 2 catches. Maybe in deeper leagues, Ray-Ray McLeod. I mean, Roethlisberger might be back next week, but... yeah, other than that, I mean, this game was gross, right? The one thing I will say about this game, the Detroit Lions really found something in the running game in this game against Pittsburgh and ran with it. You know, pun not intended, but it was pretty much intended. DeAndre Swift, 130 yards on 33 carries. Remember, no Jamal Williams in this game. He was inactive. Swift had 3 catches. Like, what a weird box score for DeAndre Swift. 33 carries for 130 yards, but then only 3 catches for 5 yards. The backup running backs, Jamar Jefferson, he scores a 28-yard touchdown before he left with the injury. And then Godwin comes in, not pronouncing that last name. He breaks off. Honestly, his 42-yard touchdown run was one of the more impressive runs I watched all season. That was really nice. And then one of the duds of the week, I mean, after really, you know, picking up steam before the bye week, in a game where the Detroit Lions play 5 quarters of football, and it was 5 full quarters of football because it went down to the final play of overtime, obviously. 5 full quarters, TJ Hockenson gets 1 target, doesn't catch it. An absolute goose egg from Hockenson. Again, in a game where the Lions offense played 5 quarters. Absolute dud, disappointment. Obviously, still a huge part of the offense and better days are ahead for TJ Hockenson. Tennessee continues their winning ways. They're 8-2 now with a home win over the Saints, 23-21. Again, the backfield, just Adrian Peterson, 21 yards on 8 carries. Dante Foreman, not much better, 30 yards, but he does lead the team with 11 carries. AJ Brown had 1 catch for 16 yards. Marcus Johnson leads the way with 6 targets, caught 5 of them for 100 yards. Like, I don't know what to make of this Titans offense. It was bad. Tannehill, if you had to start him, you got pretty lucky. There was a drive where the Titans kept getting gift penalty after gift penalty in the red zone and finally got inside the 5, inside the 3, and I believe Tannehill, you know, ran it in from a yard out. And then he had another touchdown because of a short field because Deontay Harris fumbled the opening kickoff. So it was really lucky for Ryan Tannehill, but it's obviously bad in this offense right now. 4 targets for AJ Brown was kind of surprising with Julio Jones on IR. But with Julio Jones on IR and no Derrick Henry, maybe there's going to be an opportunity for Marcus Johnson going forward or Westbrook Akina or Chester Rogers. But, I mean, they threw to a lot of different players in this game. Let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 different Titans had at least 1 target in this game. I'm not starting anybody on this team other than AJ Brown there right now. I think they have Houston next week. So on paper, yeah, maybe a good spot for Peterson or Dante Foreman. With, you know, if you have a bye week, I think Daryl Henderson, the Rams are on bye off the top of my head. So maybe that's where you go, but you're not excited about it. For the Saints, Alvin Kamara did not practice this week with a knee sprain. He was ruled out, and Mark Ingram handled like 80% of the carries. got a ton of targets, had over a 20% target share. He had 7 targets, caught 4 of them for 61 yards, and had a rushing touchdown. Kamara didn't practice, and if he doesn't play next week, you're looking at Mark Ingram as a clear top 15 running back. That was elite, borderline elite usage from Mark Ingram in this game. Again, he had, 18 touches? 18 of the, 21 running back touches? And if you count Taysom Hill, Taysom Hill 3 carries for 23 yards, added a reception for 15 yards. But, that is an incredibly valuable role for Mark Ingram that you love to see. The Saints really weren't in, first and goal situations or goal-to-go situations in this game. So we didn't get a chance to see if Taysom Hill would be vulturing touchdowns away. But still, you love the playing time. You love the involvement in the passing game. You love the carries. I'm pulling up his snaps right now if I can find it. So Ingram played, I just had it and I lost it. I'll go back to it if I can find it. But yeah, the moral of the story is you love the usage, and if Kamara's out, you're starting Mark Ingram pretty easily. Outside of that, the passing game, Traquan 4 for 44 and a touchdown on 7 targets. Callaway scored on 4 targets, but Adam Troutman's involvement in the passing game has gone up each of the last couple weeks. Maybe someone to keep an eye on in deeper leagues. He was very, very hyped in the offseason. Started the season off run blocking a ton, but the Saints just, they tried to add Odell Beckham. They don't have Michael Thomas coming back this year. They need just anybody to step up in their passing game. So I would say keep an eye on Adam Troutman. Okay, the surprise of the week, and I tweeted it, right? Week 9 was about all the teams that got upset, right? Buffalo got upset. Dallas got upset. Everybody got upset. And Tampa Bay was on bye. They didn't get a chance to get upset. And they made up for it in week 10, losing to Washington 29-19. Let's start with the Bucs because it's pretty easy. Brady, not the best game. Still scored twice. One to Mike Evans, who only had 3 targets in this game, which was very surprising. And the other one went to Cameron Brate. Chris Godwin, 7 for 57 on 8 targets. And Leonard Fournette, team high 9 targets, caught 8 for 45 yards, handled 11 of the 12 running back carries. Ronald Jones didn't even get a touch in this game. Fournette is a clear top 12 running back the rest of the way. Even in a game where it was shockingly a bad game script for the Bucs, Fournette still was really, really good, had 19 touches. I'll say the 3 targets was pretty surprising for Mike Evans, given Antonio Brown and Gronk out, but he does salvage his day with a 40-yard touchdown down the sideline. Again, every team will have a bad week or two. This was one of Tampa Bay's. Their offense will be back on track going forward. We know that. And we'll see if they get Antonio Brown and Gronk back. That's the question, right? They've been out for a while, and again, they're still not easy to defend, but it becomes a lot easier for defenses. For Washington, look, I'm sure a lot of people, myself included, told anybody asking the questions, I probably wouldn't start Antonio Gibson this week. It's not a good spot. He's not 100%. One of the best run defenses in football. And Gibson has 64 yards and 2 touchdowns on 24 carries. So if you stuck with Gibson and played him, I'm going to be honest with you. You got lucky. His first touchdown came from a yard out on a questionable pass interference call in the end zone. Put him at the 1 yard line. He scores. His second touchdown came on 4th and goal from the 1. Washington. It was the right decision by Ron Rivera, right? There was, 23-19. Time running out, 30 to 40 seconds left. Bucks had no timeouts. It's okay, do you kick the field goal and then kick it back to Brady to give him the ball at the 30-yard line or whatever? Or do you just go for it, put the game out of reach if you score, and even if you don't score, they still need a touchdown and they're inside their own 5. And Gibson got that touchdown. So I will say you got lucky, but I'll also say coming out of the bye, the week before that, Jarrett Patterson was more involved and stuff like that, but Gibson getting 24 carries, that is encouraging. Regardless of the touchdowns, the production, you should at least be encouraged by that. Didn't suffer, I don't believe, any injuries or, aggravate the shin injury in any way. Again, it's not going to be something that's going to be fully healed until probably after the season, but Jarrett Patterson played 5 snaps in this game. Gibson played 46, ran 14 pass routes to McKissick's 18, so that's great to see. Really, really good to see. The 24 carries were actually a career high, for Antonio Gibson. So you have to feel a lot better about him going forward. Ricky Seals-Jones left this game with an injury as well. John Bates came in and caught some passes. They hope to get Logan Thomas back next week, so we'll keep an eye on that. Terry McLaurin also left with a collarbone injury. He did return, fortunately, though, and had a solid but not spectacular game for Washington. They also lost Chase Young, which they believe was a torn ACL, so brutal loss for him and the Washington team, but he will be back. He's an absolute star. It pained me to watch him. I think he came back onto the field on the sidelines in crutches, and it's just, you know, you hate to see that stuff. It's heartbreaking. All right, a handful of games left. These 4 o'clock games I was excited about, and they weren't great, especially this one. Carolina 34, Arizona 10. Again, Kyler Murray and DeAndre Hopkins were both out for this game, so Colt McCoy got another start. Suffered a shoulder injury, you know, halfway through the game, did not return. There was nothing from Arizona here. James Conner, in the worst game script possible, bailed you out with a touchdown, you know, early in the fourth quarter or so. Christian Kirk got off to a great start. He had like 50 yards in the opening half and finished with 758 as the offense just kind of stuttered. 8 targets for him. AJ Green was back, but Kirk was still the clear wide receiver one. It sounds like Murray, he practiced on Friday. They're obviously being very cautious with him, as they should be. They get Seattle next week. Very good chance Kyler's back, but Hopkins, man, I don't know about Hopkins. We have to really wait and see on DeAndre Hopkins. For Carolina, we saw Cam back, and look, I Cam Newton is one of my favorite players in the history of the NFL, so I'm really happy to see him back. And they had a couple packages set for him. He came in from inside the five, ran for a touchdown, and then threw a touchdown to Robbie Anderson, who, you know, still has a pulse, apparently. 4 for 37 on 6 targets for Anderson. DJ Moore, another dud, 4 for 24 on 7 targets. I really miss early season DJ Moore. I really do. It sucks. Christian McCaffrey, though, back in the lineup. 13 carries for 95 yards, adds 10 catches on 10 targets for 66 yards. So this is why Christian McCaffrey is the cheat code of all cheat codes in fantasy football. He did not score a touchdown this game. He was ruled out at the 1 or 2 on a would-have-been touchdown. Then he got pushed out of bounds at the 5. Chuba Hubbard stole a touchdown from him. Chuba Hubbard and Amir Abdullah had 18 carries combined as the game was out of reach and McCaffrey's snaps weren't as high as they would have been in a competitive game. McCaffrey went to the Blue Medical Tent to get looked at. He was fine, but again, the game was out of reach. So all that kind of went against him, and the guy still scored like 26 PPR points. Just an absolute cheat code, starting him every week. And a lot of people were worried that he might have aggravated that hamstring injury when he was seen on the sideline getting kind of stretched out. I saw a report that he didn't. So that's good to see and good to hear for Christian McCaffrey. PJ Walker still handled the majority of the quarterback passing attempts, but it's very possible Cam Newton, after a full week of practice, or, you know, this week or next week, could be the full-time quarterback for the Carolina Panthers. And there's obvious upside here. I mean, the guy scored what, 10 fantasy points on however many snaps he played, you know, 8 to 10 snaps, whatever it was. So clearly upside there with Cam Newton. We'll see how that progresses going forward with Sam Darnold out for the Carolina Panthers. Minnesota 27, the Chargers 20. Justin Jefferson, they made it an effort. They talked about it during the week that they got to get him more involved, kind of the squeaky wheel theory with Justin Jefferson, and it was evident. I mean, he caught 9 balls, 143 yards, made plays deep down the field in contested catch situations, led the team with 11 targets. Really great game from him. 5 for 65 on 7 targets for Thielen. And Tyler Conklin's been really, really quietly productive for fantasy, right? The yardage has been great. He's been like top 13 among tight ends in routes run. It's just he hasn't been scoring. He hadn't scored since week 3 prior to this game, but he scores twice in this one. So that's great to see if you streamed Tyler Conklin, if you played him as a cheap DFS tight end today. That's great to see from him. And then Dalvin Cook, who just continued to get tackled over and over again at the 1 yard line all year long. Even into this game, he got tackled at the 1 yard line a couple times. Finally gets in the end zone, handles 24 of the 28 running back carries, has 94 yards and that touchdown, adds 3 receptions for 24 yards. So it's nice to see Dalvin Cook finally get some touchdown luck going his way for the Vikings. And Kirk Cousins, a solid game, lost a fumble, but still has 294 yards and a pair of touchdowns. For the Chargers, another down game from Justin Herbert here. 20 for 34, 195 yards and a touchdown. Had an interception in this game. Eckler, 11 for 44, but he caught the touchdown. Keenan Allen, another really strong game from him. 8 for 98 on 11 targets. And then Mike Williams, another dud from Mike Williams here. 4 catches for 33 yards on 6 targets. I will say Mike Williams' day should have looked a lot better. Had a quick slant in the, you know, in the red zone. Went right through his hands. He should have caught it. Would have been a touchdown for Mike Williams. And now you look at it and it's just, I mean, Mike Williams has now been bad in like 4 straight games. And I'll have to look at the numbers after this game. But in the first like 4 weeks of the season, Mike Williams' ADOT, his average depth of target, was down from like 14 last year to like 10 the first 4 weeks of this season. But the problem is, lately, during his kind of, you know, stretch of games where he's been underwhelming or borderline bad for fantasy, that average depth of target is back over around the 14-15 range. So he's being used less so in the intermediate range, which is why Keenan Allen's been popping off the last couple weeks. So, yeah, I'm like, I talked about the last couple weeks in the solo pod, like, you shouldn't have been viewing Mike Williams as a low-end one anymore, more of a mid-range to low-end two, but they're using him in more of a volatile role than they were in the beginning of the season. And that's concerning for Mike Williams. So, like, you can't, I don't think you can really trade him for anything right now. Like, the sell high window is obviously closed. It's been closed for a while. Like, the last 4 games, he has 10 catches for 137 yards and has not scored. And he's dealt with a knee injury, you know, the last couple weeks. I don't know if that's how much that's bothering him, but he's, you know, like I said, he's more of like a risky wide receiver 2, higher end wide receiver 3 for me right now. And that was the case prior to this week, and it's even more so the case now. So, all right, 2 games left. Philadelphia 30, Denver 13. Really, Jalen Hurts, really impressive game here. He had 1 bad interception that he threw to Justin Simmons. But he had, you know, some great throws in this game. Had 178 yards and 2 touchdowns. Both go to Devonta Smith. Then he had an absolute dime. Maybe the best throw of his career. Like 30 to 40 yards down the left sideline. You know, in not tight coverage, but decent coverage. Went right into Quez Watkins' arm in the back of the end zone. Dropped it. Would have been a 3rd touchdown for Hurts. That was the best throw I've ever seen from Jalen Hurts. It was very, very impressive. He looked great in this game. And per usual, 14 carries, 53 yards. So he's been, you know, over 40 yards in pretty much all of his games this year to give you that floor. And the Eagles, once again, I mean, going into this game, the last 2 weeks, 71% run rate, easily the highest in the NFL. And they continue to run the ball here. I mean, 12 carries, 83 yards for Jordan Howard. 11 carries, 81 yards for Boston Scott. This offensive line, and we talked about it a lot in this podcast, pass protection, they're not as good. But with Jason Kelce, who got hurt in this game but returned, with Kelce, with Lane Johnson, with Brandon Brooks, they have been elite in terms of yards before contact. And some of those numbers are skewed because Jalen Hurts' rushing numbers factor into that equation. But they've been really good in that department, and we're seeing it now. I mean, Jalen Hurts has been under 25 passing attempts in 3 straight games. And Miles Sanders might be back this week or next week. But I think the Eagles clearly have shown that this is what's working for them and they have to stick with it. So the problem for Sanders is Howard's played well, really well the last couple weeks. Scott's played well. So I wonder if it's now just a 3-headed backfield in Philadelphia, which Nick Sirianni would not be, nobody would be surprised if Nick Sirianni went that road. Like I said, Devonta Smith, really nice game from him. Had an incredible contested touchdown catch over Patrick Surtain. And then Dallas Goedert left this game with a concussion. Definitely something we have to keep an eye on. He did not return to the game. So with already no Zach Ertz, obviously, on the team anymore, I mean, we're going to see even more targets from Devonta Smith going forward. And maybe Quez Watkins becomes somebody to keep an eye on in deeper leagues. Denver, again, the backfield is split. Gordon gets a touchdown, 9 for 45. Javonte ran well in this game. I feel like Javonte has a touchdown called back every week, but he had a touchdown called back in this game. Finished with 8 for 48. I was really high on Noah Fant. The Eagles had been awful against tight ends going into this game pretty much all season. 5 for 59, but they like combined, they were bad again. I mean, Alberto had a 64-yard catch and run. He had 77 yards. Fant had 59. I like Jeudy a lot in this game. He had an underwhelming game, 6 for 48, but he led the team with 9 targets. And then there was Courtland Sutton. Courtland Sutton now has played 4 games alongside Jerry Jeudy. In those games, he has a 9.8% target share. He has 6 receptions. Not 6 receptions per game alongside Jerry Jeudy, but in the 4 games he's played with Jerry Jeudy, Sutton has 6 total receptions, and he's averaging 23 yards per game. With Fant healthy, with Tim Patrick, a very, very good player and very involved in this offense, with Jeudy as the one, and with Albert O involved, and both running backs getting touches, there's not enough volume in this passing game for Courtland Sutton to be trusted. Like, if I can help it, I'm not starting Courtland Sutton. And yeah, this was a bad matchup, shadowed against Darius Slay, but the point remains, like, there's just not enough volume for him to be consistent. When he's still the downfield guy, he still leads the NFL in deep targets. Yes, there will be some spike weeks. I get it. But Jerry Jeudy in the slot and the intermediate is going to be the number one target in this game, in this passing game. And they love Tim Patrick. So, yeah, I'm Courtland Sutton for me is like barely a wide receiver 3. I have very little interest in playing Courtland Sutton the rest of the season. All right, last game, Green Bay 17, Seattle 0. Russell Wilson and Rodgers return and combined for 0 touchdowns and 3 interceptions. There's really one takeaway from this game, and it's Aaron Jones. Left this game with a knee injury. It sounded bad because he was seen on the sideline crying and talking to his family, and your heart went out for him. Hopefully it's not as bad as it sounded, because early reports are that it's a sprained MCL for Aaron Jones. And if that's the case, he would still miss time, but I don't know if it'd be season ending. So we need to see updates with Aaron Jones. Obviously AJ Dillon came in and dominated and scored 2 touchdowns. He's going to be a top 10 running back for as long as Aaron Jones is out, but Patrick Taylor in deeper leagues, he'll be the backup to AJ Dillon if Jones missed time. And look, I mean, AJ Dillon's awesome, but Matt LaFleur, maybe he still wants to use 2 running backs, even if Aaron Jones is out. I don't know if they just give it all to AJ Dillon. So definitely keep an eye on Patrick Taylor. Devontae Adams, 7 for 78 on 11 targets. These are his bad games, so you'll take them. It's how good Devontae Adams is. And then honestly, nothing else from this game. I mean, Seattle was dreadful. Russ was 20 of 40 with 2 interceptions. Metcalf was bad, got ejected. Metcalf, Lockett, and Gerald Everett all had 8 targets each. The problem is Everett was the only one that did anything with him. 8 for 63. Lockett at 2 for... It was just an awful game. Wilson's first game back showed some rust, especially on the deep ball. I expect better days ahead. But again, keep an eye. The main story from this game, Aaron Jones leaves with what could potentially be a sprained MCL. And again, I'm no medical doctor. I don't know anything, but I would guess he's at least out for a couple weeks. If that's the case, hopefully, though, it's not season ending for AJ or for Aaron Jones. Perfect timing as we wrap this up. It's about 8:20, so I'm getting ready to watch the Chiefs and Raiders. And look, whoever wins this game gets possession of first place in the AFC West. So it should be an exciting game. Hopefully the rest of your fantasy matchups go well for you. Nice little 40-minute pod to recap the slate here in week number 10. Already about to be in week 11, but we have 2 games left. Chiefs, Raiders, and then Rams 49ers on Monday Night Football. We see the debut of Odell Beckham Jr. with the Rams. This has been Fade the Chalk solo edition recapping week number 10 for Adam Pfeiffer. This is Fade the Chalk, presented, of course, by the FTN Network. Tuesday, Debo and I will be back for the Waiver Wire podcast. Until then, have a good one. We'll talk to you guys.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Fade the Chalk with Derek and Adam. Make sure to follow your hosts and the podcast on Twitter at @DBRO_FFB, at @APPfeiffer24, and at @ChalkFade. Smash that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode.